Hello, I'm so excited to be here with you today on the podcast. I'm going to guess that most of the listeners here don't recognize my voice or my face because this is my first time on the podcast. So I wanted to take just a few minutes to introduce myself to you today before we get into the topic that we are going to discuss.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity. And that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
I started in the real estate world in 2017. Prior to 2017, I had absolutely no experience in real estate. But my husband signed us up for a seminar to learn more about investing in real estate. And I listened to what they had to say, even though I went kind of begrudgingly to the seminar. And I thought, this makes sense. This is really smart. We're going to do this. And we've been in it ever since. I used wholesale as an exit strategy for my first six deals as I figured out all of the additional pieces that I needed for a fix and flip exit. And as of today, fix and flips are my preferred exit strategy. I sold my first fix and flip, my first rehab in 2020, and have been doing fix and flips ever since. I've also been a member of the 7F Runway Group as well as the 7F Altitude Group. I worked as a laser coach, helping those out in the Runway Group. And today I work as an instructional coordinator for Seven Figure Flipping. Prior to getting into real estate, I was a school teacher. I taught mostly science in and mostly high school. And then I was a stay-at-home mom. I have two kids and my husband worked full-time. And then as I was home with the kids, I decided to get into this real estate investing kind of on the side. So that's a little bit of a background about me. So you know a little bit about why I'm here talking to you today. I want to take an actual real estate property, run some numbers on it, and decide, is this a deal or is there no deal? And as we run the numbers on this, I want us to keep in mind what our preferred exit strategy is. So just a brief recap of exit strategies. We have retail, which is where you take a property and you sell it on the open market. Typically, it's listed on the MLS. It's probably move-in ready if it's residential. You also have a wholesale exit, which is where you kind of act like a middleman, where you find a property that needs to be sold and you find an in buyer to actually buy that property. You have a fix and flip exit strategy where you purchase a property, you force the appreciation by updating it, repairing it, and then you sell it typically in the retail market. We have buy and hold, which is where you purchase a property, you may or may not fix it up, and then you rent it out to others. And then maybe some two other exit strategies that are less well known is wholetail, which is kind of a mixture between wholesale and retail. You might purchase a property that is in need of some update or repair, and then instead of finding an in buyer to assign it to, you list it in the retail market. It might be in good enough condition for a retail buyer. And then lastly is a novation, which is a little bit more complicated of an exit strategy, but I would say basically you take control of the property, you get legal permissions from the owner to do things with the property, and then you sell it, whether you fix it up first and sell it or just sell it as is. So today I have brought you an actual piece of real estate, a real deal that I want to look at, and we're going to run the numbers as if we're going to do a fix and flip on this property. So this house was built in the 1930s. It's in Ogden, Utah. It has two bedrooms, one bathroom, 1,858 square feet. So it's just under 1,900 square feet. And the seller of this property is asking they're asking $139,800. So just under $140,000. This is after a $10,000 price drop. They had it listed originally close to $150,000. So when we see this deal and we want to run numbers on it to see, is this actually a deal or is there no deal here? The first thing we want to do is find our ARV, which stands for after repair value. If I purchase this house, I update it, I repair it, and then I list it on the market, how much could I sell it for, fixed up and listed? So in order to do this, there's a couple ways you can go about it. We're not going to go through that process here, but really a real estate agent in your local market is going to be your best friend when it comes to finding out after repair values. Or you might have the skills to find out that yourself, which you could do as well. So basically with the after repair value, we're going to take our subject property and compare it to other properties that are very similar. So they have similar numbers of bed, bath, similar square footage, similar year built. They'll also be updated and repaired, and they'll be in close proximity. And most importantly, they have sold recently. So we're going to take a look at their prices that they sold for. And from that, we get to determine what the value of this house fixed up would be. So for our example, our ARV here is going to be $180,000. So once we know our ARV, we can continue gathering things to help us figure out if this is a deal or not. So the next thing I want to think about is how much is it going to cost me to do this deal? How much is it going to cost me to purchase the house, own the house, and sell the house? And I'm not going to go in a ton of details about where we get these numbers, but I'm going to tell you, we're going to take 10% of our ARV to figure this out. So 10% of $180,000 is $18,000. So we're going to assume it's going to cost us $18,000 to buy this house, own this house, and sell this house. Okay, so that would be our cost of the deal, $18,000. And that's going to include like your title insurance policy, the fees from a title company, the recording fees, the property taxes you'll pay while you own it, the utilities, the insurance that you're paying on the property, and then also any agent commissions that you're paying when you sell the property. Okay, so now besides owning the house, buying the house, owning the house, selling the house, we're going to have some other costs as well. And that's going to be the cost to repair the house, do the updates that we need. So we can look through the pictures of this house and kind of see what it needs. The carpet could definitely be changed. It could use a new coat of paint. The kitchen looks like maybe we could keep it as is. We might want to change some flooring. The basement isn't completed, so we could do some work there. When I ran through these pictures, I decided this is going to be a light rehab. I'm going to count on $10 per square foot to rehab this house. I'm going to speak a little bit more to that number a little later on, because some of you are probably going like, whoa, that's not very much money. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. But I'm estimating that it's going to cost me $10 per square foot. It's just under 1,900 square feet. So we're going to say 19,000 for my repairs on this house. Now, the last thing we need to take into consideration here is how much we're going to pay ourselves. What is going to be our profit? That's a really important part of this equation. So there's a lot of ways you could approach this. For this situation, I'm going to choose to do 15% of the ARV. So 15% of $180,000 is $27,000. So I'm going to make sure that I budget a $27,000 profit for myself on this deal. So now, once we have all those numbers figured out, we have the ARV, we know how much it's going to cost us to do the deal, we know how much the repairs are going to cost, and we know what we want for our profit, we can just do some math. We're going to subtract all of those numbers from our ARV to get what we call our MAO, or our maximum allowable offer. So we come up with $116,000. That is the very most that I am willing to pay for this property. If I pay more than that, it's going to take away from my profit. To me, it becomes too high risk if I decrease that profit any more than that. So I do not want to pay more than $116,000. So at this point, you could be looking at this and saying, oh, they're asking $140,000 and the most I can pay is $116. This is no deal. But it's no deal at their asking price. Every piece of real estate has a deal somewhere. We just have to find what makes it a deal. So the reason I brought this particular property to today's show was because this was my very first real estate deal. So when you look at the maximum allowable offer and you see how much lower it is than the asking price, you might be like, how do you make that work? So I'm going to show you exactly how I made it work to be my first deal. Just a note for you, if you guys are in the Ogden, in the Utah market, you might be like, those prices are really low for like an asking price on a house. Probably anyone in the country is saying those repair costs are really low. This deal was from 2017, so it's 7 years old. Today, those ARVs are a lot higher. The purchase prices are a lot higher. The rehab costs are a lot higher. So I just wanted to show you this one so you could see an actual deal and an actual first deal for somebody. So let's go ahead and look at what I actually offered on it and how this went down. So I was feeling a little bit nervous about making this offer because my offer was so much lower than what they were asking. And I felt a little bit nervous about, I didn't want to offend them, or I just thought they would reject it. But my real estate agent urged me to put in the offer, even though it seemed a little bit low. And I want to tell you that I have changed my perspective on making offers since then. I always put in an offer if I take time to analyze a deal. And if you're feeling hesitant about this, you could look at it as the perspective of, if you don't make an offer at all, you're not giving that seller any options to move forward with their life or to move forward with selling their real estate. But if you do make an offer and a number that makes sense for you, you at least give them an option. They can reject it if they want, and that's fine, but they also have the option to accept it if they want. So I put in my offer on this property for $110,000, and I paid $1,000 in earnest money. So earnest money is basically some money you pay forward at the beginning of the contract. Usually in my state, you have to pay it within 4 days of your contract getting accepted. But it's a way that I show to the seller that I am serious. I am earnest. I really want to buy their house. And it gives them a little bit of protection. If we continue progressing with this and I back out, then they have a little bit of monetary compensation for that. It's also a way to show that this contract has like consideration behind it. So with my offer, I also needed to submit a proof of funds. You won't always be asked with a proof of funds, but it's common, especially with properties that are that are listed on the MLS to request a proof of funds. So this is some sort of documentation that proves to the seller that you financially are able to pay for this house. Now, I'm going to be really honest with you. I did not have $110,000 to pay for this house. That wasn't in my bank. You know, I didn't have that cash under the mattress or anything, but there's somebody out there that had that money, a lender that would maybe lend it to me or a different buyer or a partner. So what I did was I used a website called Best Transactional Funding, besttransactionalfunding.com. And I could put in the details of the house, what the purchase price was, the address of it, and click submit. And it generated a letter for me that I could use as a proof of funds that basically said that company was ready and able to pay forward that money on my behalf. So basically they would be my lender is what they were saying. So if that's like a sticking point for you on a deal that you don't know where you're going to get a proof of funds from, find a place to just get you a free one so that you can present that to the seller. I also put in my contract that it was conditioned upon due diligence. So I wanted to make sure that I had some time period to do a little bit more homework, to do my due diligence and make sure that I wanted to move forward with this purchase. And I would say a pretty common due diligence time period in the retail world is like 14 days, 2 weeks, but it can be anything that you put in the contract. I put 9 days for due diligence, which was really short for a first real estate deal for me. But I wanted to make my offer look competitive. So I did 9 days for due diligence. And I also put in the contract that it was not conditioned upon appraisal or financing. So in other words, we didn't have to wait for an appraisal to come back to say that the house was valued at a certain amount. And we also didn't have to wait for a lender to approve financing for it. So then I also put in there that we would close in 14 days. So 2 weeks. This was a quick turnaround for me. When I submitted this offer to the seller through my real estate agent, the seller came back and countered that they wanted to close in 11 days. And I agreed to do that. It was going to be a tight timeline, but I saw that I had a deal in my hand and I wanted to make it work. So at this point in time, I was thinking, I don't have the resources or the knowledge that I need yet to do a fix and flip exit with this. I'm not like totally confident in my rehab numbers that I did. I don't really know where I'm going to get the financing to purchase this. And so I decided to wholesale this deal, to assign my contract to another end buyer who was able to close on it in that 11 days. So I submitted an addendum to the seller, which is like, I want to change the contract, like an official form to change the contract. And it basically told the seller, had the seller agree with me that I could assign the contract. The contract that I used in Utah says in the contract that it's not assignable. And so I had to change that if I wanted to assign it. So my addendum I submitted said paragraph 19 from Rep C will not apply, and buyer reserves the right to designate the entity and or individual in whom title is vested at closing. In other words, it's saying we can close this deal under any name. It doesn't have to be my own name. So what I did from there is I shared this deal with as many cash buyers as I had. And I'll be honest with you, I did not have very many cash buyers. I had only been in the real estate world for a few months. But as I had been networking with people, I had been finding people's names and contact information and recording them on a spreadsheet so that if I ever wanted to assign a deal or wholesale a deal, I would have some people to reach out to. So you might wonder where I found that buyer. The buyer was a fellow student or classmate from that seminar I had gone to earlier. He was a contractor who had been flipping homes, doing his own work on the houses and flipping them. And he had gone to the seminar to learn more and become better at doing that. But I had kept in contact with him. So I emailed this property out to him. He saw it. He came and walked through the property with me. He said he liked it. And right then and there, we signed an assignment contract where he agreed to take over my contract to purchase the property. And he wrote me a check for $6,000. So that $6,000 covered the $1,000 I had paid for earnest money and then left me a profit of $5,000. This gentleman showed up on closing day and purchased the property as agreed. So it turned out to be a really great first deal for me because I actually went through the process. I gained a little bit of confidence that it actually does work and that people actually accept offers, even if they're below their asking price. And then I brought a deal to this gentleman who wanted more flips. He wanted to do more. So I think it would be fun to kind of look at what he did with it on the backside. So let's look at his numbers. I don't know how much money he put into the rehab. So I'm not sure if he spent more or less than I had anticipated he would do. But I will say he did a very light rehab. He didn't do much in the upstairs. He painted it. He updated the bathroom a little bit. In the basement, though, he added a bathroom and a bedroom in it. So he got to list the house as a 3-bedroom, 2-bath instead of the original 2-bedroom, 1-bath. And he also listed it for more square footage than what it had been listed at before. And I didn't have a conversation with him about that. So I don't know where that extra square footage came from. It could be that he got it appraised and maybe the square footage originally was incorrect. And so he just corrected the square footage, or it could have been that he was able to add on some square footage in the basement that before maybe wasn't counted as livable space. But somehow he was able to increase the square footage, increase the bedrooms, increase the bathrooms, so he could force the appreciation on that project. So he listed it about 4 months after he bought it from me. And it went under contract in 5 days after he listed it on the market, and he ended up selling it for $170,000. So $173,000. So it was a little bit lower than what I had anticipated it could sell for, although he didn't fix it up as nicely as I anticipated it would be fixed up as well. So some takeaways for us from this is, whenever you're analyzing a real estate deal, figure out what number makes it a deal instead of a no deal. Is there some number, some purchase price that makes sense for you? Or maybe there's some other terms that you could request that would make it a deal for you. So find the number that makes it a deal. And then this is the biggest piece, make the offer. Once you found that number that makes it a deal, make the offer. Give that seller a choice. Give them another choice than they had previously. And then I think my third takeaway from this is that make sure that you're constantly networking with others within the real estate industry and elsewhere, and record the contact information for these relationships you're building, because you never know when you need an end buyer in 11 days. So the more people you've networked with, the more options that you have moving forward, the more roads that you have that you can take. So I hope this was helpful for you. Finding out that this property was a deal, even though I couldn't offer what they were asking. And I hope that some of you out there who are listening that maybe haven't done a real estate deal yet or haven't done many can see that it is possible. It is possible to do your first deal, even if you don't know much about real estate, even if you don't know much about how to calculate repair costs or what all the different costs are going to go into to buy, sell, and own a piece of real estate. I simply used percentages when I ran my numbers for this deal because I didn't have the experience or the knowledge to get more specific than that. But I had learned from others around me who had the experience and the knowledge, and they were able to tell me from their experience, it typically costs them this amount of money to do this type of thing. And so I trusted their numbers. I used their numbers. I practiced it and I put it to the test and it worked. So go out there, make offers, and have a great day.